The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, John Moxley returns to Talk is Jericho. One of the highest rated episodes ever was a few years ago, right before his surprise appearance at, I believe it was All Out, in Las Vegas, the genesis of AEW. And now he's one of the biggest stars in the company, former champion, and he's got a brand new book out, simply called Mox. And it's not just the story of his life, it's more a journey through his mind that includes flashbacks about things that happened during his life and his career, his time at WWE, lots of great stories, childhood, recollections, love and loss, marriage advice, random things that he likes, including music and sandwiches. He talks today on Talk is Jericho about the process of writing it, what inspired him, why now was the right time, his favorite moments of the book, including stories about The Shield. Mox is a great writer. You might not expect this, and I wasn't sure what to expect when he was sending me kind of some pre-notes and ideas and chapters, and this book is very, very good. Moxley is a very gifted writer, and I'm really excited for all of you to check out Mox. I'm also all of you excited to join us for the four-leaf clover, Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea number 4. I know that it's very close to the Triple Whammy, which we just wrapped up last week, and I will be doing an episode of Talk is Jericho about the Triple Whammy, but we wanted to get back on the spring schedule, so we figured, hey, the Triple Whammy is such a huge success, maybe the best one ever. Let's do it again. Let's do the four-leaf clover, March 14th to 18th, 2022. That, of course, is right over St. Patrick's Day. Come sign up for the pre-sale list right now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Get your cabin booking before anybody else if you join the pre-sale list at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And join us in the UK and Ireland and Northern Ireland when Fozzy returns to Europe November 29th in Liverpool. It's very, very close to selling out. There's only like literally a dozen tickets left. Go to FozzyRock.com if you want to come check out Fozzy at the famous Cavern Club. Can't wait to do that show. Manchester is sold out. Newcastle, still tickets available at the Riverside. Glasgow sold out. Dublin sold out. Belfast at Limelight One, still tickets available, but that one will sell out. So will Newcastle. Chester is sold out. Birmingham at the Mill, tickets available for that. Bournemouth at the old fire station, tickets available for that. Swansea in Wales is sold out. Nottingham is sold out. And London at the Academy in Islington is also sold out. But don't forget, we're also doing our exclusive VIP meet and greet before every show. One of the best in the business. We do a mini concert for you, just the private concert for all of you there at the VIP. So go to FozzyRock.com for all remaining tickets and VIP meet and greet packages. All right, let's get to it. We got John Moxley returning to Talk is Jericho right here, right now. One of the highest rated shows in Talk is Jericho history is John Moxley, which was about 2 years ago, and now many things have changed, which has been a huge kind of difference for you in comparison to where you're at a couple of years ago here in AEW now.
It's been a long ass time since
Hasn't it, right? Last time.
Yeah. We haven't done this in quite a while. Think about the difference in just the entire world since the last time we did this.
I know.
Because last time we did this was a couple days before AEW ever ran a show.
That's right.
So at that time, I didn't even know like how the crowd was going to react. We didn't know if this was going to be a success, if this TV deal was going to fall through. It was all like we're Lewis and Clark going west. Mm-hmm. We were like about to set out on the journey. There was no Dynamite. There was no Dark. There was no Dark Elevation.
I didn't even think we had a TV deal then at that point, did we?
I don't even know. It was like we had one show booked. That was all I knew, you know. So,
right.
And now, like, look at everything that's happened in the last 2 years. It's insane.
Well, even the fact that there was a pandemic and all this stuff. And it's interesting, too, because...
Oh, Jesus Christ. I didn't, yeah.
You and I had a great feud, a great story, a great angle, which culminated into you winning the title. And literally 2 weeks later, the whole world locks down.
Yeah. Since we last talked, we were friends, and then we became enemies, and then nearly killed each other, and then became friends again, I guess. Yeah, because we're sitting here. That's how much has happened. Yeah, it was... that night in Chicago, and then we had the next night in Denver a couple of days later, and the very next week we're in Salt Lake. So I had one like time to have the championship in front of fans in Broomfield, Colorado, and then the very next week we're in Salt Lake, and I was going up the night before to film a sit down with JR, and I was like, finally we're on the West Coast, so like I have an easy flight. I only got 30 minutes. I don't have to spend a whole day in the airport. This is great. And then I just, because all the flights were getting messed up because it was, this was like right at the beginning of COVID. So like, it was like the first episode of Walking Dead where like shit starts going weird. So like my flight gets delayed and gets delayed and delayed and delayed and canceled. And then I couldn't find any of their flights. And it got to where I was like, damn it. This is the 1 week I had easy travel. And like, now I have to drive to Salt Lake City to make it in time for this interview. So I drove 7 hours, and the whole time I was just listening to the radio, and they're like, this coronavirus thing. And I was just like, is the world ending right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I driving across Utah and the world is ending? Like, should I turn around and batten down the hatches and get a shotgun? Like, what's going on? And then I believe you were in the ring, actually, promoting the original Blood and Guts when they got word that they're like, that ain't happening. Sold out house in Newark.
Yeah.
It's done. Like, and I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I'm like, what the hell's going on? And then, you know, then... Everybody knows the story. We don't have to talk about the depressing parts.
It was funny. I went to the ring because I was talking with Raphael, who's our booking booking agent, whatever you want to say. And I said, do you think we're going to get to Blood and Guts in Newark? He said, I think so, because next week was Rochester. That's on for sure. We think we can make it to Blood and Guts. I went to the ring for 15 minutes, came out, and during that time frame, Rochester was canceled, Newark was canceled, the NBA was canceled, and Tom Hanks announced he had coronavirus. It was a pretty eventful 15 minutes. And like you said, then it just, that was it.
I remember Tom Hanks because I remember when I was on the, we were walking the dogs, throwing the ball for the dog and stuff. And I was going to go to Ireland that weekend. And then Renee's on her phone and she's like, Tom Hanks has the coronavirus. I was like, man, they got Tom. Jeez, I mean, this thing might be serious. And then we came in and then I looked up. And the news was on, and it was like international travel ban from Trump or whatever. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'm not going to Ireland this weekend.
Yeah.
And then like 5 seconds later, it was like, yeah, sorry. Like it all happened so quickly. It's crazy.
How was it for you being
moving to the light?
Sorry. Yeah. The for all of us, I don't even know how to turn it off, but for all of us, it was hard working in front of no fans, but here you are as a babyface, super over, becoming the champion, everything, timing was right. And then was it hard to kind of be a champ after that with nobody?
I mean, it sucked, but I just ate it because, first of all, there was so much, and I've said it a million times in a million interviews, there's so much actual bad things going on in the world that I'm like, I'm not going to feel sorry for myself for 1 second. Just that, oh, we don't have fans. This sucks. Like,
right.
Big deal. Like, you know, like it actually was almost kind of fitting for me. I almost felt like I was the perfect guy, because to have to kind of carry the torch and take on that responsibility for that period of time, the whole Daly's Place wrestling in front of no fans thing. Because like in WWE, I always felt like I was kind of the unheralded workhorse who like kind of kept the lights on and was always the guy who was called to do like the hard, crappy jobs and stay and do the dark match and get on. Do the first match and get on a plane and literally run to the airport in your gear, get in a little tiny plane, and then go do it for the next match. And I feel like I never really got the credit for being as much working as hard as I did. But I didn't care. I was just like, hey, you know, I put my time clock in, and I put my hard hat on, and I go to work. And if you're paying me, I'm here to do what you need me to do. So I almost felt like I was like, how fitting. Mm-hmm. Of course. Now, like, this new AEW thing and win the championship and everything's going good and all these new stories we can tell. And then, boom, the world shuts down. I'm like, who's going to be shouldered with this responsibility? I'm like, of course, it's me. Mm-hmm. But, like, I took it on. I was like, you know what? I just owned it and went, you know what? I'm the pandemic champion, basically.
Yeah.
And nobody will remember this time period with any nobody will look back on it fondly. Because the whole world sucks so bad and everybody's lives were, you know, miserable because all this bad stuff happened in the world. Everybody just wants to forget the year of 2020. So basically, that whole year, like, nobody wants to look back on the glory days of, you know, my run on top or whatever, you know. So it is what it is, though. You know, I'm proud that I was able to do that. And, like, we're in a war with NXT or whatever. And, you know, I don't get into that, but, you know, all that, and we kept ratings going, and, you know, I feel like I did a really, really good job, and I'm proud of what I did during a very dark period. So, you know,
well,
I,
and also too, like you said,
I'm proud of it.
We did good ratings. We kept the lights on for our company, and we kept a lot of people entertained when they really had nothing else going on. So I'm really proud of what we did as a company too. And you kind of leading the charge for that. I'm proud of it as well, because, like you said, I think it was very necessary to give people a diversion every Wednesday when all this other shitty stuff was going on.
Yes, exactly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So when you were off, is that when you came up with the idea to write the book?
I didn't even come up with the idea. That's how a lot of stuff is with me. Like, I did, like, anytime I've done a movie, it's not like I had some idea that, like, oh, I want to go be an actor. No, it was like somebody just said, hey, you want to be in a movie? And I said, sure. Okay. Like, all I ever want to be is a wrestler. That's all I really want to be. That's all I really care about. But other stuff comes to you and you go, hey, I'll try it out, you know?
Right.
So it was like this chick, Amanda. Damn you, Amanda, for for doing this to me. She's from the publishing company. It's a small publishing company. And I wanted to go with a small publishing company if I was going to do it, because I want to have full control, and I don't want, like, a big corporate thing. I don't want to have fights with anybody. I want it to be more of like the whole thing was kind of like feels like a very DIY project. Like, I found my own photographer. I wrote every single word of this myself. This is the least edited book of all time, which we'll get into in a minute. Actually, they wanted me to write a book in WWE. They asked me to, like, one of their WWE books. And, I was like, I don't know, man. Like, why? And I was like, I don't even have, like, I'm not, like, a former president or anything, man. Like, nobody needs to hear my story. I'm not that interesting. And I was like, yeah. And they put a bunch of money on the table. And I was like, maybe. So they talked to me, this ghostwriter guy or this whatever. I didn't know how the process worked. And I'm like, I don't have time to write a book. I'm going to write 300 days a year. Mm-hmm. So the guy talks to me. He's like, yeah, basically, you know, I'll just ride around with you and follow you, and you just tell me stories, and I'll put them into words. And it made me so uncomfortable. And I was like, I don't know, man. If I was going to tell my story, I would tell it my way. And it was like, they were kind of, I don't know, but I kind of felt some pressure. And then I remember I actually asked Bryan Danielson, who had written a WWE book, and I said, which was good, I thought. And I was like, yo, if you could go back in time, would you do that book? And he said no. Instant. Like,
really?
Like, he said no. Because he's like, it wasn't exactly how I wanted it to be. And I was like, that's all I needed to hear. That was like what my instinct was telling me. So I told him no. And they're like, really? And it was a lot of money on the table. But I was just like, nah, it makes me feel really uncomfortable. And like, I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm not doing it. And that was it. So I kind of never thought that would be revisited. But then this chick comes to me with, like, sends me an email, opportunity to publish a book. I'm like, oh, here we go with this again. But then I was talking to her, and I was like, well, the first time around I thought about this, I was like, okay, if I was going to do it, right, would do something along the lines of like Willie Nelson has a couple books. One called The Tao of Willie, one of my favorites.
Tao?
T-A-O. Like The Tao of Willie. Mm-hmm. A Guide to Happiness or something like that. And one called Roll Me Up and Smoke When I Die. And they're not like, there's kind of a collection of stories, jokes, lessons, stuff. And you just kind of, you know, it's not to be taken super seriously. It's an easy read. Mm-hmm. But you get a real sense of what it's like to hang out with Willie Nelson, what it's like to be in his world, like what his thoughts and his feelings are. But it's not like I was born here and then this happened, then this happened. It's not a linear story. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of a collection of stuff. I was thinking back then if I was going to do it, it'd be something like that. And she was like, I love that. And I was like, really? Okay. So we were talking. And so I just wrote. I've never written anything in my life. I'm not an actual writer. I have no formal training or education in this whatsoever. Never written anything. Don't even try to have me handwrite something. My handwriting is like a 2-year-old. So I wrote, I think it was one of the first chapters I wrote. I was like, okay, let me just see what I can put down on. So I wrote it on my phone. It's one of the first chapters that's in the book. And it just took me like an hour. And I was kind of like, this is kind of fun or whatever. And I just sent it to him as like a sample. I was like, it'll be stuff like this. Like very short, easy stuff to read. And they were like, we'd love it. Like, so they sent him, I did another one and sent it to him again. They're like, this is fantastic. And then we started talking more about like what it would be and whatever. And I was like, okay, well, and I liked that it was with a smaller publishing company. And I was, cause they weren't going to screw with me at all. I like made it very clear that I'm like, words don't get put in my mouth. It's going to be my exact vision as it is, you know?
Right.
And that's exactly what it was, you know, so credit to everybody.
Well, the thing about it is too, is that when you sent it to me, because you sent me some stuff right out of the gate, and I remember thinking like, this is really good, because there were certain things when I read in the book, like you were talking about, like you mentioned, you have a bunch of stories and then there's little vignettes and little kind of anecdotes and all this sort of stuff, albums that you really like. It reminded me of a lot of the way that I wrote my books. And I remember you saying that you thought that the Cliff Burton's bass work at the beginning of Damage Incorporated was whale noises.
That's what I thought it was for years.
But I remember reading that and going, this is really good. And the other one you said something about, you know, about I have a green phone. My texts are green. I'm that guy because I don't f*** the iCloud. That was something else that you said in one of your earlier samples. And just the way you wrote it is like, this is really, really good stuff. Because like you said, you're not a formally trained writer. But what does that really mean? Either you can do it or you can't. And right away, you had a certain style that you sound like, this sounds like talking to Mox while I'm reading this.
Yeah, the whole process was touch and go. I was figuring it out as I went along. Because I was like, okay, we're going to write a book.
Yeah.
Let's see how this goes. And even though I'm not like a writer, I like to think I'm pretty decent promo from time to time. And I've been doing that for years. And what you're doing in a promo is you're telling a story. In 2 minutes, you say, like, you know, when I was a kid, I was walking through the grass barefoot. And I got bit by a snake. And it almost lost my foot. And I've been mad about it ever since. So this Saturday, Jake the Snake, I got a bone to pick with you. You know, you take him on a little ride. You think of a hook and why are we in this match and why do I hate this guy. And so I'm like, I kind of know how to tell stories already. So I kind of looked at it like this is just a promo, but it's like the longest promo of all time. It's a 272 page promo. And I wanted it to be like, and I told them this too, I was like, I want it to sound like me. So the writing is very unorthodox, if you want to call it writing, because I want it to sound, when you read it, exactly the way I talk. Mm-hmm. Like if I was like, man, I'm gonna go down to the store and get some beers and shit and then come back, I'll write the word and shit. Even though you don't need to write the words and shit, that's the way I would say it in real life. So if you read it like that, you can hear me saying it, because I'll just throw an and shit out there. That's the way I talk, you know? So I'll be like, yeah, let's go do that and some shit. So I wanted to read exactly the way I talk. So it's very unorthodox. So I just got like the physical copies like the other day, and I was thumbing through it for the first time. So you've been through this process. So like, all the fine-tooth combing and the editing and everything, and I have to give the final green light and everything. And I read through it so many times that I began to hate it. Because you get so close to something, right, all of a sudden you don't like it anymore. Like, I'm sick of this freaking book. Like, I read through it so many times, I'm sick of reading it. And I got to a certain point where I was just like, I mean, it's pretty much there. It's like 99, like there's like tiny little, I'm like, ah, but it's like, we got a deadline. Like, I'm like, it's good. And at one point I just went, it's good, send it off. Right. This is the book. And then I forgot about it for a while. Then I got the physical copies and saw like the design and everything. And the design is very deliberate and the everything, it's black and white, except for the back and the front. And I saw it come together exactly like I wanted to. And I told them too, like the design, I was like, I almost want this to look more like a journal, like a random journal of a guy, more so than like a book. Like it goes all over the place. It jumps in space and time. Yeah. It's all, it's not linear at all. And I want it to look dirty and sloppy, almost like it was just like a thrown together journal you found in somebody's basement. Like, and that's exactly how it looks. And I was just like, whoa. So I'm thumbing through it and kind of like, I'm on the plane last night. And the beginning of a certain, so I'm just calling him out right now. So at the beginning of a paragraph, it's on page 126. And it's not a very important part of the book or anything, but it cuts off like a sentence and a half.
Hmm.
It was like a story about like my dad came down to pick me up from Detroit. He lived in Detroit. And he came down to pick me up on weekend and we drove up to Detroit. I mean, that's basically what the opening sentence was. It was like, my dad came down to pick me up from Detroit or whatever. But it cuts that off and it just starts out with like a lowercase word, weekend.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. I like almost flipped my lid on the plane. I was like, oh my God, this is going to look like some rinky dink ass book, whatever. Oh, Jesus. As soon as I land, I texted a picture of it to the publisher and was just like, hey, did anybody notice this egregious printing error? I was like, how many of these do we print? Is this going to be like us? And then they're like, oh, we already knew about it. We're freaking out, you know? And I thought about it for a second and was like, you know, it's actually kind of cool. Because it didn't ruin it. It ruined the book or anything. It's just like, and they're like, it'll be in the first run, we'll have that error. The second run, I don't know how many books comes in a run.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know.
It depends how many they print.
Yeah. So however many come in that first run, it'll have that error. And then after that, it won't. Like if you buy it on Kindle, like it won't have that error. Right. But
paperback.
It's kind of cool because it's kind of like, I was like, those will be like collector's items. Like if you got a signed book where page 126 is a little messed up, you'll know that was like from the first run.
Right.
And I'm like, it's actually very fitting for this book because it's a very dirty book. I wrote the whole thing on a notes app on my wife's MacBook, which I can't operate at all. If I'm going to be on a computer, I need to be on like a 90s computer with like a mouse, like from Computer Lab, you know, like this MacBook. I literally couldn't operate one function of this thing except the notes app because I could just type it and press the button and it would send to my email.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime like something weird would pop up, I have to be like, Renee, I don't know how to fix this. She'd have to come down, fix it for me. So, I mean, it was written on a notes app. It's as dirty as can be.
Right.
So it totally fits that like there's like an error in the first run. Oh, and like I was texting my friend Jill is in the book and her last name is Fields. And somehow in the book she became Jill Shields.
Oh.
So I texted a picture of it. I was like, I guess you're Jill Shields now. I don't know. This whole thing's a shit show. They should have never asked me to write a book. Like, so there's a bunch of like little fun mistakes like that that I actually kind of think it's kind of cool, you know?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's interesting that you said the Willie Nelson books, because when I wrote my first book, the two biggest inspirations was Mick Foley's book. Same thing, wrote it himself, sounds so much like Mick Foley. And then the guitar player from The Police, Andy Summers, had written a book that was really funny, and there was a lot of great little anecdotes that kind of didn't fit in with the narrative, kind of like yours. And I thought like that gave me kind of a template on how to write my book. And it sounds like you had the same from Willie's, the way that you kind of put it together.
Yeah, and like I said, it was touch and go. Like some of the first stuff, some of it's like very, very light, and I'm just being funny, and it's obviously not to be taken seriously. Like a lot of the random, like some of my favorite music or this or that, a lot of that was just kind of to fill space and just to kind of get me going at the beginning. And also it's like less intimidating because you don't have to open up as much. But at some point you start getting to where like, okay, now I got to like get into some real stuff. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had it set into like four chunks of time periods in my life. And then like the bigger chunks are like where I had to like really actually like write and like remember stuff and go back. And so some of the stuff will be like from when I was first just messing around with writing. And then some of it will be like when I started feel like I was getting good at it. Mm-hmm. And then once I started feeling like I was getting good at it, I was having some real fun with it. But like, it's almost like when you got to come up with a promo or a storyline, you got to really mentally put yourself in that place that it's real. So like going back to some of these times and places, I had to like get myself there. And it's not easy. Mm-hmm. As you know, you can't just sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write 1,000 words today. Because sometimes it just doesn't come. Like you have to, sometimes you're in a zone and you can't stop writing. Mm-hmm. It depends. And if I'm going to get, like, if I'm going to remember a certain place in time, like, I got to get myself there. So, like, there was, like, a time I was, like, out on the porch. Like, when I was getting near the deadline, and it was one of the chapters that I liked the best. And I was, like, got to really make this good. And I was, like, feeling it. And I was out on the porch, like, 2:30 in the morning. I've been out there for hours. I'm, like, slamming beers. I'm, like, I'm pacing around. I'm listening to music because I'm trying to listen to the music that I was listening to at the time. I'm trying to get back in the headspace of like where I was at that exact moment when I was about to go like murder somebody or something. So then she comes out and she's like, "What's going on?" She's like, "Are you on drugs? What's happening?" Mm-hmm. But I'm like, "I'm writing." Like, you know. And then, but it's cool when you think of like the, oh, that's the closing line of this. It's like the same thing as a promo where you go like, "That's it, yes," and you're like high five somebody. You're like, "That's it," but the weird thing is you don't get instant feedback. Mm-hmm. So I've been waiting for months. I'm very so excited for this to come out because it's like, it's not like you can go in there and cut a promo in front of the audience and then nail it. Then I get an instant feedback and I'm like, I know that was good. If you write something, it's going to be months and months and months and months before anybody reads it. So you're like, was that good? I don't even remember what I did. Like, so I'm excited for it to come out.
Like, I found some of like for some of the books over the years, when you write about some of the darker stuff, like for me, the two that really stand out is my mother's passing and then the whole Benoit story. And writing it was really hard. Like you mentioned, I remember I was drinking some vodka a little bit to get deep into it and really get into it. But the cool thing was, once I did it, I felt like it was almost like some closure and a purge of my feelings. And to know that it's in this book, I can put it on a shelf. I never have to go into it or explain it ever again. If you want to know, you can just read about it. Was it like that for you for some of the darker moments that you wrote about in the book?
Yes, exactly. There's a definite catharsis to it.
That's it.
And there's some stuff you would have never thought about again. But then when you go back and kind of explore it, you see it differently. Because now you're a grown up. Mm-hmm. And now you go back and you go. And some of the stuff you laugh at yourself and you go, like, that's hilarious. That's what my mindset was at the time. And some of the stuff you understand better. Or you understand somebody else's perspective better. Mm. Or you go, oh. And it kind of makes it easy. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I've been carrying around that baggage, but I don't need to. Like, it's stupid. But like, it kind of forces you to kind of introspect. So that's a really cool kind of byproduct of it. And
I'm thinking about the Danny Havoc chapter. Danny Havoc, right?
Havoc?
Yeah.
That I put that off until the very, very.
It's a close friend of yours that passed away just this year, right? Or last year?
Yeah, and that happened. Yeah, that happened like during this whole process, and like, it was like a new one. And Brody too,
right?
You know, so both of them. I don't want to give any spoilers to the book, but obviously they're both in the book. I put off the
inevitable.
Like, yeah, with the Brody one, it was like, that's an example of one that I told him don't touch a single thing, no editing. No, like if there's like a period or a comma, if you have to, whatever. But like, there's anything that's like time stamped, like where are we at right now? Miami, 3:22 p.m.
Right,
Jericho's dressing room. I wrote it one time. However, if maybe it took 15 minutes, maybe took an hour, whatever. But I wrote like they're like journal entries. Mm. Anything that's like time stamped with like a location and a time code, that's not messed with like at all. I told him like, don't mess with it, like one iota, even if there's, even if it doesn't make any sense to you, because if you did and you start, and there's one of them like that where they started kind of changing stuff around because they didn't think it made sense. And I was like, no, now you're messing it up. I was like, yeah, it sounded, it reads terrible, but I was like, that's the place I was in at that exact moment. Like if I'm at the Marriott at 4:02 p.m. and this is what I was thinking and feeling, like the night before pay-per-view or something, that's exactly how I want it to play out. So you get exactly what was going through my mind and exactly how it came out. So it's not changed at all. Yeah, but I was still in like a state of shock during like the Brody one. So it was really weird. I put off the talking about Grant, Danny Havoc until like the end. Cause I put it off until I was like, I don't even want to get into this cause it's going to suck to like get into it. That was like maybe the last thing I wrote, but there's a lot of, you know, lighter fare.
No, but do you feel, like you said, was there a little bit of catharsis to get that on the printed page? Your feelings are here now?
Yeah, it definitely brought closure to some stuff, you know?
Well,
a lot of different stuff, you know?
How about this? A little bit lighter fare, but still something that was very intricate in your journey to AEW was your whole WWE experience and everything. There was a lot of great stuff in there about the good times and about some of the bad times as well. Was that kind of a catharsis to write about that for you?
Yeah, definitely. That's another factor of it too, is because what I definitely didn't want this to be, and what I was afraid they were going to want it to be, or I was afraid maybe people were going to expect it to be, was like a bitter bitching about WWE book. And that was like, I'm not even gonna bother doing that. That's not like, not interested in that at all. But it's also, I'm gonna tell you the truth about, so you get my exact thoughts and feelings about how I feel about what goes on there and how their process works and all that. You know, we've talked about it a million times.
Yeah, there's no secret the way you feel, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm gonna hit you with it very bluntly, but like, I'm not going to like focus on any negativity. There's probably a month I lost of like writing about stuff like WWE related and stuff where I was like, I feel like I have to put this in because I feel like that's what people are going to expect or want. And I just hated it all. I was like, I don't like this. I don't like reading this. Maybe there's somebody out there who just loves
dirt,
to trash WWE and they love dirt and they want to hear about this. But I don't feel like, I don't like it. So I was just like, I can't at all. I just deleted it all. I was just like starting over. So with WWE mostly, I try to hit on a little bit of everything, but I mostly focus on the good stuff. And there's a lot of good stuff because it hit me where I was like, okay, this book is about who I am. This book is not about who I'm not.
Right.
So I'm going to, you know, I might give you some thoughts and feelings about some stuff. Basically, we'll focus on the good stuff and who I am and what's, you know,
That's what Mick told me when I was writing my book. He said, a book is not a place to have a vendetta. And he said,
In so many wrestling books, people take shots at each other.
And there's no reason, because in the end, you won. It's your book. You're here. You're happy. You basically won in life. So to be burying people or be bitter or whatever, it doesn't fit the narrative of what you are talking about here.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking, I was like, if I die tomorrow, if I get hit by a bus, this is going to be like the final record of my life. So I want people to like know who I was, the good and the bad and the ugly, but like, I don't want to like focus on other,
right.
Focus on anything stupid. That's like not worth my time that like, I'm not even worried about anymore. So like, I don't know why I'd bother writing about it, you know? So I think it hits on like a little bit of everything about every time period of my life. And I think it did kind of like bring there's probably more WWE in it, honestly, than AEW. Because AEW is kind of currently going on.
Sure.
So I'm kind of experiencing it now, even though there's a lot of AEW. But it kind of like, I don't know if I want to say brought some closure, but it kind of like, it kind of puts a pin on the WWE run very nicely.
Perspective.
Like that's over and moving on. And it was all great and everything. And now life is good and we move on. So.
You know, what I liked reading about it too was I'd kind of forgotten because I mean, I don't know if he was even there, but just how close the Shield was as friends and as a united front against, you know, getting with basically in WWE.
Yeah, the early days of Shield were wild, man, because like the company was different. It was a different environment. The locker room was different. You were there, so you know, like
and a lot of people didn't like us. I remember actually, you were one of the first guys. We did a random ass six man with you early. Like, we just started wearing like the SWAT gear. We were still wearing like heavy ass boots and busting people's lips with them and shit. We did like a random six man with like you and Sheamus and somebody or other. And afterward, it was the first time we would ever work together. And afterward, you were like, man, you guys are really freaking good. Like, you guys are like, you're right there. You're in the pocket. You guys hit hard. Like, you know, you guys work like Japanese. Like, you keep the pace up. You were like, these guys are freaking good. Like, you were like one of the first guys who was like, not mad at us for being there. Like, everybody else was really intimidated by our presence, but you were like, nah, these guys are good, you know. And then it wasn't long before everybody started to want to work with us because we're having such good matches. So that's all the whole.
But why were people mad that you were there?
Just because it's, you know,
it's new and fresh.
People protective of their stuff, and you know, it was a less welcoming environment back then. I mean, you were there.
Yeah, 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 sure, like, of course.
Some new guy coming in with a big push, or some like.
I was that new guy once. That's why.
Some group coming in. They're going to beat everybody up. People are like, "Who the hell are these guys?" Mm-hmm. Like, they're nobodies. Because we were complete nobodies. It wasn't like we were big stars from NXT. We were complete nobodies,
right?
And we were coming in beating up like the Undertaker and a Rock. So people are like, "Who the hell are these guys?" Mm-hmm. They're not going to do that to me. And we're like, "Yeah, we are." You know. So it was a little, but oh, so the whole. You know, I thought that was the thing people were really going to want to read about. The whole Shield story is, you know, in there.
And I'd forgotten, too, that all three of you were world champion in the same night.
That is true, too. That's all in there, too.
Yeah. And, I was in that match with you.
Yeah, that whole story. Yeah. So that's another thing. You know? If there was ever a stamp of, you know, because we were like, screw you, we're going to take this over. And if people were like, disagreed with that, on one night, all three of us were the world champion. I think that tells you everything you need to know about, like, we were right.
Yeah.
We were right.
Mm-hmm.
So screw you, you know?
Yeah, Roman was the champ. And then you had won the ladder match, the Money in the Bank. And Roman was the champ in the main event. Seth beat him. And then you cashed in, right?
Yeah, which kind of like tied up a whole 2 year kind of story arc, which was really cool. So I mean, that kind of is a stamp of like I said, we were right. And like we did exactly what we said we were gonna do, and now we're all doing pretty good, I think.
There's a great you can give a little snippet of it without giving anything away. There's a great story of you being under the ring waiting for your turn, and just how it is under the ring. Describe that.
Yeah, like
Were you with Nick Daw, or who were you with?
Nick Daw. People don't know, like, every WWE show you watch, there's a guy under the ring at all times. Because he's there to, like, fix the boards and do stuff. And
see, I didn't know that.
You never been under the ring?
Well, I've been under the ring. I didn't know there was a guy there at all times.
No, he's there, like, all the time.
To fix the boards that break and stuff?
Yeah, like, he just hangs out. He's got a monitor, got a headset, he's chilling, man. And that's, like, one of those things where another rule I had. You know, I had a few rules. Some of them are, I'll keep as trade secrets, proprietary secrets, as far as this book. But one of my rules was, okay, don't just recap anything that happens on TV. Because I feel like a lot of wrestling books are like that. They just start out.
Sure.
I was born here, and then I did this, and then this. And then when they get to like the wrestling part, they're like, then I wrestled so-and-so at this pay-per-view. Then I wrestled so-and-so at this pay-per-view. And then the next month, we did a bladder match.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we already saw that. That was all on TV. So it wasn't going to be like, that's exactly what I was not going to do. My rule was like, if it happened on TV, you already saw it. Mm. Or if I already told the story a million times in a podcast, whether it be your podcast or somebody else, or I've told it in an interview a million times, I'm not just going to recap stories everybody's already heard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to give all new information. So with like the thing under the ring, obviously people saw that story play out on TV, but I tell the story if I can give it from a different perspective.
Right.
Either tell you the stuff you didn't know that was going on behind the scenes, or, for example, being under the ring. You know, you're seeing the same story, but from a totally different perspective. Like, that was kind of one of my rules.
Which is great, because people don't know what it's like under the ring. You know what I mean? They never saw that. That's under the surface of what's going on.
Yeah, there's so many things that, you know, cool things about this
process,
this business
gotcha.
It's cool stuff you get to do and see, and stuff that a lot of fans, all they see is what's on TV.
Yeah.
But there's so much cool stuff where I'd be like, man, I'd like, there's so many cool stories that go on like behind that people don't know. So like that was kind of the stuff I wanted to bring out.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I just remembered something that was awesome. It's not in the book, but I remember the time when we were doing something in a cage, or maybe for the Ambrose Asylum, and you were one of the techs at the ringside, and you had the mustache.
Big mustache, yeah, dude.
I just remember that.
I'm not gonna lie, the it was a big hit with the ladies backstage.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah.
The mustache.
Yeah, it got a good response. Renee was very. She was into it. I was like, I might have to become a mustache guy. Like, I might be like a Tom Selleck guy one of these days. Not right now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, I feel like one day I could
pull that off. Great story in there too about it's not a story. It's a thread of the book about your relationship with Renee, your wife, and how you met her there and kind of courted her and the whole story. I didn't realize that that's how you guys met, basically backstage, kind of in passing, at a WWE show.
Yeah, it took like all of 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, I guess we're together forever now, basically. So the whole saga of my romance with Renee Paquette is in there too, if you like romance.
Well, and you have some great advice too for your marriage advice.
Yeah, there's a whole chapter about my guide to marriage, of which I have learned a lot. Mm-hmm. Never thought I would be married, but you know, I'm picking it up as I go along. So maybe the next book will have a guide to parenting.
Yeah,
because I'm figuring that the hell out as I go along. I'll tell you that. Haven't slept in a month, you know.
No, it was great though with the marriage tips, and you know, if she's getting ready and she says it's going to be 15 minutes and it's 45 or 50 or 55.
Yeah, that I'll give that spoiler, because you know, anybody could be dealing with this at any moment. You know, if a woman tells you that, you know, I'll be ready in 20 minutes, that is not the case. It is not 20 minutes. Don't set your clock for 20 minutes. It's going to be a lot longer than 20 minutes.
Right. And but, don't rush.
Don't push them.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, let them do their thing. You know, so there's a lot to learn for maybe if you're in a new marriage or thinking about getting married, you know, you can,
something you can
learn a lot in this book. Yeah.
It's like I said, something you wouldn't expect from the Mox book, but there's a lot of those types of things within there. Another one of my favorite parts, which is amazing, is the sandwich dissertation.
Oh, I have, I'm very passionate about the art of the sandwich. And I'm a sandwich guy, you know. I like a good sandwich. Mm-hmm. It's one of the greatest inventions that ever, you know. You just grab it, take a bite. It's got everything, you know. And you can be really, really creative in a sandwich. So there's a whole chapter about
but you can ruin it too.
But yeah, oh, there's a lot of mistakes you can make and really screw up what could be a great sandwich. And I hate to see that, you know. I become like old Les Thatcher when it comes to sandwiches, where I'm like, I don't like to see this people making mistakes. So I mean, there's stuff that's literally that stupid, like, but there's a chapter about sandwiches, you know. I remember telling him that, where I was like, just thinking about the initial thing, I was like, okay, like, I don't know anything. I'm not an expert on anything. I don't even know if I'm an expert on wrestling. Like, I'm not a guy to come to advice for like anything, like in general. I'm not going to act like I am, right? But I've been around, man, and I've seen some stuff, and I've been some places. So like, I may have learned something along the line that maybe I can pass along to you, you know? So there's a lot of, you know, it's by no means a self-help book or a book of advice, but you know, there's a lot of that where I'm just kind of like, I made every mistake and did every stupid thing humanly possible in my life. So I can tell you a lot about what not to do, you know,
like, right.
Don't step in a bear trap, or not that I stepped in a bear trap, but for example, you know, like, I can tell you exactly what not to do.
Well, I love to, just about the sandwich, there's actually a John Moxley original dart drawing in it, which is amazing.
Oh yeah, there's original artwork. This book has everything.
This book has everything. Also too, very candid about some of your partying days, partying stories, drug stories in there, which I love too. It's like when I read Keith Richards' book, it's like, you know, we're all in show business. And I did the same in my book. Like sometimes you go and have a good time and do what you're going to do. You're not glorifying or saying anything wrong, but you're very, very candid about some of those things, which I really appreciated.
Oh yeah. I have no, I'm not going to say I have no regrets, but I have nothing to hide. If somebody says like, you know, don't act like you're know what you're talking about, 'cause I was there when you like did whatever in a strip club or right. You're running naked through the streets with a pineapple on your head or whatever it is.
Right,
like
right.
I own it. Like I'll be like, yeah, I did that. I might do it tomorrow night. You know, who knows? We don't know how long this night's going to go. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm hanging out with Jericho. He might pull out the goose. Who knows what's going to happen, you know? Like, and I'll apologize for tomorrow. So I'm like very the book is very unapologetic. Mm-hmm. I was very much like, all right, if I'm going to tell you what happened, I'm just going to tell you what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you got to strike a balance of like, because there's like, you know, you only have 272 pages or whatever it turned out to be. And you only have, that's another hard thing about it, is they put you on a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're like, you got to cram this in and you got to see the whole vision. And you don't strike a balance of like my childhood. Wrestling, WWE, AEW, death matches, the indies, my initial start in the business, like all these things, you have to have like a balance. So you can't, so you kind of have to pick, okay, like what's one good story from this era? What's the best story from this era that illustrates this point? I can't just tell you every single story about every time I like did a bunch of drugs and got passed out and got arrested, because that would take up like, I need like 5 books. You know, I can't tell you a story about every single match ever that happened, because I would need like 5 books.
Right.
So you got to kind of like, pick the best story that illustrates this period of time or this example of this behavior or what's cool about wrestling or whatever it is. You kind of balance it out.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
We worked with Pete Fornatale, who's been my collaborator, I like to say, for all 5 of my books in different ways for the last 15 years. How did Pete help you with the process?
Oh, yeah, and you know, for the millionth time, thank you again for hooking me up with him, because he was the best. So actually,
he gets it, right?
Yeah, you're one of the first guys I texted when they're like, I was about to do this thing with this book. I'm like, man, should I commit to this? And I was like, you've written a bunch of books. I was like, I don't remember what I asked you. I was just like,
you just said it.
I was like, did you write these yourself?
Yeah.
Are you cool doing that? Or they make you like, are they gonna make you like, are they gonna mess with your words? Like, what is this process like? Is it worth it? Is it time consuming? And you're like, basically, like, yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's totally worth it at the end, which was exactly right. So I'm glad that I did it. So thank you for pushing me in that direction.
A pleasure.
Be like, you're like, I'll hook you up with my guy Pete. He's the best. Because I was really worried about who would be the editor, and I was just really worried about it getting screwed with and getting my words messed with, and maybe I have PTSD from all these writers or something. But I was like very worried about that. But he hooked me up with Pete, who was like, I gave him kind of my vision. I was like, this is like a very DIY punk rock looking book. I don't want, you know, it's going to be dirty. You know, I don't. And he was like, I totally get it. He totally got the vision. And the way I thought about it was exactly what you said. Where it's almost more like I've never written music, but he's more like a music producer.
Yes.
It's not like he's editing my words or changing my words or flipping them around or doing anything with sentence structure or anything like that. It's just like, I'd send him a piece and he'd read it and be like, oh, it's really good, but I have some questions. Like, what do you mean when you say this? Or what are you referring to when you say this? Or he'd be like, you're almost there. Like, I get what you're going for, but I think you can illustrate that better. Mm-hmm, like, he was almost more just like a test audience.
Yeah, right.
Where he would read it and be like, okay, I see what you're going for, but that's not good enough yet. Like, you're almost there. You can do better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'd push you to be like, you can do better. And I'd be like, I worked really hard on that, man. Well, screw it. Oh, yeah, okay. And then, but then you go, like every single time he was right on the money. I was like a lot of times he'd call me out on stuff and be like this doesn't make any sense. Cause you're like double talking. You're like little simple stuff.
Yep.
Like, I think I said, like, I don't remember my parents ever being together. which I really don't, because they got divorced when I was so little, so I don't really remember them together. But then a little few lines later, I mentioned I remember like the night they got divorced. So he's like, how can you not remember them being together and remember them getting divorced? That doesn't make any sense. I'm like, oh, you're totally right. So I'm like, I guess what I mean is like, I don't remember them like together. Cause I'm like, I don't know. We're talking about memories from when I was five.
Sure.
You know, but he was totally right. I'm like, oh, that makes perfect. Like little stuff like that,
yeah,
that I didn't catch cause it makes sense in my brain. Mm-hmm. But when you read it, he's like, no, that doesn't make any sense. So you just restructure or whatever. But he was, yeah, invaluable. And then like they took it to like, so he was more there just as like a creative guide and like to bounce stuff off of. And then he's like, yeah, then we're going to put it to the copy editor. I was like, what's a copy editor? Mm-hmm. I literally didn't even know what a copy editor was. And I was like, I just wrote a book. I don't even know what a copy editor means. I was like, what does that mean? He's like, that's just the guy. He's not creatively involved. He just fine tooth combs and make sure there's like periods and commas where they need to be. So he was probably having a hell of a time because they came to me with all kinds of questions because he's not like emotionally or creatively tied to it all. And it's so the writing is so unorthodox. A lot of it didn't make any sense to him. Mm-hmm. So he's like, is this what you really meant? Or what do you mean when you did? But they're all like simple questions, but he probably couldn't make sense of what the hell was going on. Like, so he probably had a hell of a time figuring it out.
But you get that. I had that like for the first couple of months specifically when I would say something like, you know, I was as angry as Nigel Tufnel was when he found a little guy in his olive. And they would come back with Nigel Tufnel from Spinal Tap. And I'm like, no, you don't explain who Nigel Tufnel is. It's like Family Guy. If you know who it is, you get the joke and you laugh and you move on. If you don't know who it is, it goes by so quickly and you laugh and you don't laugh and move on, but you never really notice what that even means in the first place. And Pete was really good at that. He would never question my examples of things that I was saying because he knew that in my mind it made sense and it was funny if you get it. And I liked working with him for those reasons because most editors, copy editors, collaborators would be like, you got to explain it. He never explained the joke. You know, Pete was on the money on all those sort of thoughts.
Yeah, that makes me think of another thing. Yeah, you're totally right. That was one of the best things you said was don't explain your jokes, which is obvious.
Never.
But another thing I wanted to do was you read a lot of these wrestling books, especially the ones you can just tell are ghostwritten and like they're not that good. They're like, anyway, and then I went to work for WWE, known as World Wrestling Entertainment, owned by Vince McMahon, started in 1955 by Jess McMahon. Or, you know, they like explain what WWE is, or like in wrestling, what we call taking a bump or whatever. And they have little like footnotes and stuff, and like they over explain
what's insulting wrestling to your audience too. They know what a fucking rat
exactly
Vince McMahon is.
And I was doing that a little bit at the beginning, like house shows are untelevised events or something. I did like a little bit of that, and then at one point I stopped and went, that's really time consuming and annoying to do that. And I feel like it slows down the book. And I was like thinking, let's face it, 90-some% of the people who read this book are wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. They're going to know exactly what I'm talking about if I use an insider term, if I say bump, if I say angle, if I say kayfabe.
Right.
If I say, oh, he's going to get juice, something like that. So I made a decision and told them, I was like, I'm not explaining terms at all. What I want, because I was like, I don't want to talk down to the wrestling audience at all, because this is who the book is for. I want it to be accessible, but I also want it to be accessible to non-wrestling fans. But I was like, and they'll be like, well, then you have to explain the words. But I said, here's why you don't explain the words, to make it cooler for a non-wrestling fan. Because so I want it to be like, if you're a total non-wrestling fan, I think you can pick up the book and read it. And why it would be cooler is because for a non-wrestling fan, this book would be like, say you were hanging out one night and you ran into a bunch of wrestlers and you ended up hanging out with them and you knew nothing about wrestling. But you ended up in a room with a bunch of wrestlers and you were all drinking, doing a bunch of coke, and they were all just talking, and you were up all night and they were talking to each other about stuff, and they were going, yeah, brother, this angle coming up, I'm gonna get juice and whatever. They were using the insider terms and they were talking to each other, and you were like, you'd pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be like, oh, you'd be like, it's almost like you're a fly on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a non-wrestling fan, this book is kind of like being a fly on the wall to the wrestling industry. I take you inside the ring, I take you backstage, all that, but I don't try to over explain anything. I just say, come with me, babe, we're taking a ride.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep your eyes and ears open. Mm-hmm. I think that's way cooler. Like, if I was interested in another genre or subculture, I would rather read about it or watch it like that. I would rather just be taken for the ride and, like, let me figure it out for myself.
Yeah.
So I think that was effective.
We were just training in the ring with Junior Dos Santos today, and obviously he knows nothing about the terms. And we were explaining, like, you know, when you hear we're going to break, that means we're going to commercials. Like, oh, okay. And so I stand outside the ring. I stand outside what's called the apron. Oh, okay. He was discovering it as we went along.
Oh, that's fun.
Enjoyed it. Yeah.
Like, that's real fun.
You had to explain it to him, right? You know what I mean? But when you as we start to wind down here, your the way you put your book together, is this in chronological order the way you wrote it, or did you write it and then kind of piece it in different places to where you wanted the different stories and vignettes to go?
No, it's all over the place. There's no it. I want it to be kind of like an episode of one of those shows where, like, there's a bunch of flashbacks.
Sure.
And, like, at the end, it all ties together and makes sense. Mm. Like, the best example I can think of right off the top of my head is, like, if you ever seen the show This Is Us. Mm-hmm. My wife loves that show, right? Yeah. So, like, but they do a bunch of flashbacks and you don't
know. Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, or about Pulp Fiction, yeah. Exactly. That's way cooler than This Is Us. It doesn't make any sense initially, but by the end of the episode, then it all ties together and you're like, oh, now I get it. So I think, like, there's a lot of that. By the end of the book, everything will tie together, but it'll jump around in space and time.
But what I meant was, when you wrote these pieces, did you place them in this order, or is this how you wrote the book in this order?
I wrote it in all kinds of different orders.
And then mixed and matched?
Yeah. Once we had it all, I had like a vision of, like, okay, there's like four big time period chunks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then we'll kind of intersperse everything throughout. And I was like, I'm not really married to the order of anything. So that's where P came in really handy.
Oh, so he would help you with that. Gotcha.
Like, I was like, we kind of had this mostly the same thoughts. And there was one where it's like, it's a really dark, holy shit, heavy chapter. And then it goes right into something like super, super light. And he's like, I feel like he's like, are you okay with this? This is a real sharp turn.
Great point. Yeah.
He's like, but I really like it because it's a sharp turn, but I really like it. I was like, you okay with that? I'm like, I think, yeah, I like it. Cool. Mm-hmm. So he basically came up with the order and I just okayed it.
Mm-hmm. He's good at that though. Like you said, like, this is really dark, let's put something light, or there's been a bunch of light things, we can put something a little bit deeper here.
Yeah, so I kind of, like, once I got all the content, I wasn't really married to any kind of order. I just kind of let him, I was like, whatever the best flow is, mm-hmm. You know?
Talk about kind of the design of the book, because it's very unique as well. Once again, most books, all of mine included, always have the color insert with all the pictures. Yours are all black and white without the color insert. Conscious decision, and what was the reason for that?
Yeah, that was another one of my rules, was don't do, like, whatever other wrestling book does, do the exact opposite. Mm. So every other wrestling book goes in a linear story. I'm going to go in a non-linear story. Every other wrestling book has the color insert in the middle. No color insert in the middle. It's all black and white. There's color in the front and the back, which are really cool pictures. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's just kind of pictures throughout. And so that was definitely a conscious decision. Getting pictures was hard, man. Mm. Like, that was one of the harder things. I figured it'd be really easy because I don't have any access to WWE pictures, and I didn't want to call them, you know, or anything like that. Like, just getting a picture of, like, the Shield was really hard.
What did you do?
So, like, we had a few photographers who had, like, who had pictures of the Shield that they owned that were at shows, but, like, none of them were any good. I was looking for, like, that one definitive picture,
yeah,
and I just couldn't find it, and, like, it was getting down to it. I went, here's what we're going to do. So I just took it. I guess I'm giving a spoiler for the book, but hopefully it won't make any difference. But so I was like, okay, you know what? Screw it. If we can't find an acceptable picture of the Shield, everybody reading this book knows what the Shield looks like. They know who freaking Roman Reigns looks like. They know what I look like. They know what the Shield looked like. Mm-hmm. They already know. We don't need to show them a picture of it. I went, screw it. We'll go the opposite direction. We won't have a picture of the Shield. So I found I found like my one old SWAT vest I had and a pair of boots and like the Shield mask that we wore for like big shows that Vince hated. Even though we would have sold millions of them.
It was like a riot mask or what was it?
We had these cool like Sub-Zero ninja masks.
Oh, gotcha.
And we wore them like the night, or we busted them out of WrestleMania, and we looked cool as fuck, I'm not gonna lie. The next night, Vince was just furious. He's like, "You can't see your faces." get rid of the mask. I was like, we're going to sell. And like the merchandise guys were more, they were like mortified. They're like, they were already coming up with designs. They're like, we're going to sell millions of these. And Vince is like, no, you can't see their faces. We did it in Australia again, just to piss them off. We didn't tell them like years later. And boy, they got pissed again. Vince just hated those masks. But I put like, so I put like my Shield gear basically on the floor in my garage and like lit it in like a artistic, stylistic way. And just that's the only picture of the Shield is just like a picture of my old gear. Like,
but once again, what a great idea. A picture that you're not going to see anywhere else.
Yeah, it's an original picture.
Yeah. See, I did the same thing in my latest book where I had the list of all my matches that I'd had. And I wanted to go.
Which is really cool, by the way. I've never seen anything like it.
Thank you, man. And once again, you want to do something opposite of whatever else is done. I don't know many people that have a list of every match. But when I was going through the pictures, like back in the early days, the pictures I had were camera, you know, and you would get them developed and you have them. Now it's all on the phone and this and everything. So I remember they're saying, we don't have enough WWE pictures. I'm like, you can go online and see 100 WWE pictures. When I saw the Metallica Master of Puppets book, which was from 30 years ago, the pictures that were the best were the ones from 30 years ago that you'd never seen of a young James and Lars hanging out, or Cliff and Kirk or whatever. So I wanted more of those early pictures that you can't find anywhere else. Like you said, everyone knows what Jericho and The Rock looks like. They know we had matches. You want to see a picture of it? Google Jericho and Rock and you'll find 100 of them. Jericho and Hayabusa when he was E.G. Izaki, you can't find those ones. So let's put more of those in there, which I felt just translated better for people who wanted to see them.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. I saw a really cool book that it was, I saw it in the airport in Seattle. That was like a guy who, he was maybe a roadie or something for Pearl Jam, but hung out with Pearl Jam for like years. And he had all these Polaroids. And it was similar to kind of the layout I wanted for the book, where it was like kind of a journal just stuck together. And there's like all these Polaroid pictures of like backstage Pearl Jam in the 90s hanging out. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. And I'm kicking myself for like, I wish that I took more pictures over the years. Like, I wish I'd have been just walking around with a Polaroid camera or whatever. But I was I was asking all kinds of my friends and stuff. I'm like, do you have any pictures from like back in the day from like this period of time, like us partying or something or whatever? I asked my friend Jill Fields, who is now Shields. And she was like, no, you hated to be photographed. She was like, you wouldn't have it. What do you? And I was like, damn, I wish we took more pictures. She's like, you hated to be filmed. You like would get mad if somebody tried to take a picture of you. So I'm like, damn it. I don't remember that, but
yeah,
apparently that's the case. Cause there's like no pictures, you know?
Yeah. So. Right. How about the cover? Great cover. Says it all without saying anything.
Picture. Yeah. Again, wanted to go black and white. When I was like, I need, you know, how are we going to like do a cover? I'm like, what are you gonna do for the cover? I immediately called my friend Ryan Loco, who's one of the best photographers in the game. He's shot a bunch of amazing pictures. He goes to like, he films MMA, sports. He films like tennis. He makes tennis players look cool. Mm. He's like the man. He's shot a bunch of pictures of me, like blood sport and stuff like that. So like I said, it was DIY. So I was like, I need a photo. I'm gonna call my friend. Boom, even though he happens to be like the best in the game.
Yeah.
And he came out to Vegas. And I was like, the only idea, I was like, do you have an idea? I was like, my only idea is kind of just like me walking down a road, because this is just kind of a, it's stories from the road. Mm-hmm. It's a trip down the,
journey.
It's the weird journey I've been on for like 20 something years. So it's like the road could be representative of that. And it's just kind of like, just me walking down a road kind of thing. And he's like, totally get it. So like we went out to the desert, filmed the shot that's the cover that everybody should have seen by now. And then he shot a bunch out there. And it was funny when we were going out to, and it's perfect. He didn't, it took less than a day. We drove by T-Mobile Arena when we were going out to shoot that. And he just happened to mention, hey, I was there the night you won the title, actually. And I went, really? Did you take any pictures? He says, yeah, I probably did. And let me look. So he ended up having
nice
pictures from the night where I won the title from like and won Money in the Bank and all that bullshit. He happened to have pictures of it that I could actually put in the book, and he just gave them to me. So that actually worked out perfectly serendipitously.
That's great. Do you remember that match at the mobile TA mobile where you won the title?
No, I do, but you got to buy the book to get that story.
Well, but I'll tell you one that you don't know, with the ladder match, which is the Money in the Bank. And this is, it was you and me, and it was Sammy and Kevin, and it was Cesaro and Del Rio. And Sammy and Kevin were convinced that they needed to build an apparatus and take some kind of ridiculously stupid bump or else nobody would care. And you were just sitting there being typical Mox, like, whatever you guys want to do. And Sammy was talking, and Cesaro said, Sammy, can I say something? And Sammy goes, no, and continues talking. Cesaro was just like, ree! And I remember I was at one point said, okay, stop. I'm the captain now. I'm taking over. Everything has to be approved by me. If you got a problem, go talk to Vince. It's all about climbing the ladder and reaching for the title. It's all that matters. And we had the match. You won. It ended up being really good. And afterwards, Sam went, wow, you were right. You had some good ideas there. I'm like, yes, of course I'm right.
Yeah, no shit. Chris Jericho, man. No, I remember all that. That was quite funny. Those matches are so hard to put. Those matches are so annoying.
Oh, yeah.
They're always big hits with the crowd. Because we just did one the other week. We were just having this conversation.
That's right. Yeah.
I swore I would never be in another ladder match again. Yeah. I hate ladder matches. Yeah. I'm not a ladder guy. I swear, like, ladders and chairs took more years off my career than probably anything.
Because
you get bone chips in your elbows. And
they bite.
And, yeah.
They bite.
I hate ladders. And I'm not a, you know, what you would call a high flyer, if you haven't noticed. So, like, I don't really need to know why I need to be going up this ladder.
Right.
And I swore I would never be in one. And Tony's like, we're doing this match. He's like, we got to announce the graphic. He's like, you know, whatever. And I was just like, I fought tooth and nail and tried to come up with every excuse why I shouldn't be in a ladder match. And then I was, but if you're paying me and I'm here working for you, I want to do a good job. I want to do a good job for the team. And I'm like, he's like, we need star power in this match and whatever. I got to give the graphic to him tonight. And I'm just like, ah, fine. I'll do the freaking ladder match. Like, I'm like, can't believe it. Like, I just swore that I've never been in another ladder match. And here I am in a ladder match again. Talking with six guys trying to figure out all this insanity. But it's like you said, all they want, they're always big hits with the crowd.
Yeah.
You climb the ladder, you dangle your fingertip a little bit on the butt. Yeah, they go nuts. Yeah,
so, it's so easy. Yeah. Last few questions for you. This book was great. It's such an easy read. I texted you right away and told you how much I enjoyed it. It's like you said, 250 pages, 70 pages, whatever it is. Great read. Will you do another one?
That's a hard question. I talked to other people who've written books where they say, as soon as they get done with it, because it's a freaking, it's emotionally, mentally draining. Like, you write a chapter and you think you're just sitting there writing, but like you're going to a different emotional state.
Mm-hmm.
So it like physically drains you,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're like, you feel like you want to just ran a marathon sometimes after writing for a few hours, you know? So a lot of people told me every time they finish a book, they swear they're never going to do another book. Just like I swore I was never going to do another ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the next one comes along, all of a sudden they're doing another book again.
Yeah.
And then they swear they'll never do another until they end up doing another. So I imagine it's going to be like that. Right now I'm so like in the afterglow.
Yeah.
Like I'm naked, having a cigarette, having a beer. I already, you're like, it's already over.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the afterglow now.
Yeah.
So right now I don't feel a need to go another round, but it's probably, I can already feel myself taking mental notes and like writing little sentences in my head while I'm watching this baby pooping in my hand or I'm walking around backstage watching people or whatever. I'm already like, I can already feel myself compiling tiny notes as I watch the world unfold around me. So maybe ultimately if people hate this and nobody buys it and it sucks, then maybe there's no demand for it. But even if there's not, maybe I'll just take some enjoyment out of doing it anyway. So I'll probably end up writing a freaking other one. I don't know. I can already tell it's going that way.
Did you get a box of books sent to your house?
Yeah, I got a few.
How cool was that when you opened the box?
It was freaking cool.
Yeah.
When I got it, I was like, I thought that's what it was. And I was like, I haven't even thought about this book in a while.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, but I got real excited. And then when I opened it and saw them, I was like, because you put so much effort and so much emotion and everything into it, and I was thumbing through it and everything, and it was like your actual vision coming to life. I'm like, I cannot believe I wrote a freaking book on a notes app with no...
Yeah.
I'm not a writer. I can't even work a computer. How the hell did this book come together? This is crazy. Like,
is there a story, last question, is there a story in there that stands out to you as your favorite or chapter?
Oh, it's tough. Because I imagine it's like when you write an album, you know, it's like, oh, I can't pick a favorite song. I'm really proud of like the story of the story of Double or Nothing, how that all came together.
Right.
This chapter about the Shield, the whole Shield story, I'm very proud of. But I can't pick one.
Just the whole thing. Tough.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, my wife already gave a spoiler because she tweeted out. She's like, look what I just tweeted. And she says, like, there's a picture of my wife topless.
Yeah, that's right.
She's like, I just tweeted this out. She's a, and I just went, damn it. I was like, you just posted a spoiler. I was like, I can talk about it because she already spoiled it. I was like, that picture is supposed to jump out at you. It's supposed to be an unexpected turn.
It did for me. It did for me.
Exactly. Yeah. That, so you experienced it how it's supposed to be experienced. Right. Like, you don't expect that to happen, you know? And I was like, you just spoiled it for her. You might as well just told them what page it was on. You can't be trusted with Twitter. Yeah, no, I'm taking your phone away right now.
Well, dude, congratulations. You said before that you're not a writer, but now you officially are, and you did a great job. I really enjoyed it.
Right, so, thank you very much, man. Much
always appreciate it. Awesome talking to you, too.
Yeah, totally, man. We'll do it again.
Thanks, dude.